Welcome to My Life as a Landlord, where we untangle all things housing and educate the curious. If you're looking for some entertainment with some honest, awkward conversations, you've come to the right show. I'm your host, Dr. Jennifer Salisbury. This is My Life as a Landlord. Welcome to it.
Well, hello, hello. Welcome to episode 6. This podcast is all about how not to chase people for money. After my first few podcasts, this was the number one question I got quite frequently. I was actually amazed when people said, Jen, I see the rules as a landlord and you don't chase people for money. How do you do that? I thought, well, the second episode for landlording has to be, how do you not chase people for money? Now, before I get into this, I need to give you a bit of context on who I am and my perspective as a landlord. That will help. I'm a landlord who self-manages my properties. We've bought, renovated, lived in, and rented these units, so I know them personally. I do not use a property management company, but I do have a local administrator who does some of the paperwork, move-ins, trouble calls, but they don't handle money. I do all the money. I do all the rents. I do all the repair bills, all of that. I also have an on-call handyman who can also be an administrator if I need them too. On-call cleaners is also someone else I have. But again, I do my own books, rents, banking, and I'm completely remote. Completely. I'm hardly ever physically present there. But unless I told you that, you wouldn't know. I do carry a phone where my local rentals are in British Columbia. And again, if a tenant calls me or texts me, I'll respond. And if I need to, I'll call them back. Or if it's something administrative, my folks on the ground can attend to it. But that gives you a little bit of perspective of who I am. I'm not a property manager. I don't manage other people's properties. I manage my own. And I do it remotely without a property manager. So that's my context as we get into how I don't chase people for money. Now, there's a couple ways, and I need to frame this properly, on how I don't chase people for money. Once your question goes legal, meaning you, let's say you've evicted someone and they've done damage to your unit and you've got a judgment for whatever the repairs are, that's what I call going legal. You already have a judgment. It's gone legal. You're in the court system. You're probably getting bailiffs or the sheriff involved. And you may even be talking about going to small claims court, but you've already involved the courts. That's what I call you've already got a judgment. You are after it's gone legal. I don't chase people for money before it's gone legal. And that's what I'm going to go in today. Actually, I'm going to go into both on how you do it because I have had tenants cause damages. I have had tenants that have not paid rent. Now, many of these topics I'm going to go through today, I will explore much deeper as we go into the podcasts. So how not to chase people for money, there's going to be a before it goes legal aspect and then an after it goes legal aspect, meaning you have a judgment. Okay, so let's do the before it goes legal aspect. 3 points. You know, if you're a fan of the podcast, if you subscribe to the podcast, you know that I do 3 points. That's my big thing. So here's the first thing. Before we go legal, how do I not chase people for money? I screen them properly. That's the biggest thing. And I'm going to do another podcast on that, of course, is how do I do screening? How do we make sure that we're not discriminating? But to set myself up for success on how not to chase people for money, I make sure that they have the ability to pay. They've got an income source. They've got savings. Maybe their company pays for the rent. However it is, they've got the ability to pay. And there is a multiple. There's a couple different ways you can look at the ability to pay, the income, monthly income versus the rent payment. Also, I look at their credit. One thing that I take very seriously, a landlord is a lender. A landlord is lending a part of an asset to someone with the promise for money. If that's not a lender, I don't know what is. So I look very closely at their credit. Now, we're going to talk more in depth about credit because life does happen, and I'm betting it's happened to you. It certainly happened to me. And there are reasons why you have problems with credit, but if you're actively working on it, does that discount you? It just depends. There's other factors you need to look at as well. But the first part at the very beginning of a tenancy with someone is you got to screen them properly. That's the first way. If most people that I've seen that are in a pickle already that say, oh, I just took them on their word. They seem like a nice guy. They were driving a nice car. She seemed really nice. Well, you've got to check references. You've got to dig deeper. You have to. It's your business. You have to. So that's the first thing. You've got to screen your tenants. The second thing I do to not chase people for money is I set up the rent payments completely hands off from day one. It is not my responsibility to make sure that the rent gets paid. It's the tenant's responsibility that the rent gets paid. Completely hands off. There's no rent collection. No one walks around knocking on doors on the first. It's the tenant's responsibility to pay on or before midnight on the first. When we receive the rents, because you can receive them by electronic transfer or Venmo or Zelle, or some people can accept rents by credit cards. I don't particularly do that, but you can in the US at least. There is in Canada, I've got an auto debit option that allows you to pay rent automatically. But there's many banking institutions all over the world that do that, that you can go to your bank and say, I want to pay my landlord every month on the first, this amount from this account. And as long as you have your landlord's banking info, which they will very likely give to you, you're going to have that. I mean, that's automatic. You don't have to even think about it. And that's how I set it up, as an auto pay for my tenants to pay automatically on the first. The other option I give my tenants is to walk directly into a branch location and deposit their rent. So if they want to pay in cash, they can. So I give my tenants three different options: either the auto pay, walk into the bank or credit union, or an e-transfer to my email, but there's other options as well. But those are the three, and say, okay, this is how we expect you to pay rent. You tell us how you want to pay it, and make sure you put a note on your, if you're going to deposit it into the local bank account, say, you know, your last name with your unit number, so we know that it's them. And in away we go. So I set it up from day one that I am completely out of the rent payments. Now, let's say it comes around to noon or 5 o'clock on the first, and I'm still missing a rent payment from someone. I will simply send a template email, and I have the same template that it goes out every single month, that just says, hi, tenant, we haven't received your rent yet today, to avoid a late fee. Just a reminder that you must pay rent on or before midnight tonight. Thanks. And that's it. And if they don't pay the rent, guess what happens the next day? They get a reminder. Now add $25, because that's what my late fee is in this particular area. In your area, it may be different, but whatever your late fee is, you should add it. Day two, do not wait. This is your business. This is not a charity. This is your business. You set up rents completely hands off. That's no rent collection. The tenant pays. All right, third thing. This is before you get legal. We already started talking about this. If they are late, have a process. Have a process. Now, how on earth are you going to know what the process is or what it should be? Guess what? If you've listened to the first podcast called The Rules, you look at your local residential tenancy laws, whatever that is for your state or province. They will tell you what to do if rent is late. They will tell you, is there a grace period? What do you have to do? Like, for example, in Hawaii, day five, you have to give them written notice to pay you, or you're going to take further legal action, which is filing with the courts. It says exactly what to do regarding your late rent payments regarding your tenants. So set up that process and say, day one, rent is due on midnight or before. Day two, late fee. day three or five or whatever it is for your area, have a process, have a template ready to go that if it happens, this is what you do. It's your business. You keep going. So before you get legal, that's how I don't chase people for money, is I screen them properly. I make sure that they have the ability to pay rent however they can in their choice. And if they are late, I have a process. And I sleep pretty good at night knowing that's going to happen, knowing that I've screened people properly. I've set them up for success. My business has made a good investment in these tenants. And if they are late, I have no problem even picking up the phone and calling them. If that you have to have an awkward conversation, just say, what's going on? You know, maybe something weird happened, like their family member died unexpectedly, or, you know, there's life happens. So you've got to kind of be able to be prepared for that. But you want to know how I don't chase people for money? That's it. That's how I don't chase people for money. Now, that's at the beginning of tenancy and throughout the tenancy. Let's say that as we have gone through a tenancy issue, let's say they've misbehaved or not paid rent, whatever it is. And now I've got a judgment. I've got a judgment of some kind, whether I've gone through arbitration or you go through the courts, whatever is applicable in your area, and you'll know what that is, especially if you've read your rules, then you'll have a judgment. And so I have three pieces of how do you not chase people for money? And these are some hard questions. I've got to tell you, I see a lot of questions on Facebook where people say, my tenant trashed my house. They're gone. Now they've caused all this damage and I have a judgment for $40,000. My insurance won't pay. How do I get my money? We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that right now. So the first thing you've got to do after you have a legal judgment, educate yourself in the collection of that judgment in your area. They're all different. And sometimes you've got to have a local bailiff or a sheriff. And I highly recommend that you call one of them, call a bailiff, just Google a bailiff in your area and explain what's happened. In fact, I would recommend you do this before you get the judgment, because that way you're educated on the entire process, the whole process before you even start. Learn about how this is going to work and say, you know, if they don't get out in 5 days, then we'll serve them this and my fee is that. And the bailiff will help you figure out this whole process. And they will very likely say, I can't help you until you get that judgment from the court. And then when you get the judgment from the court, I will do this, this, and this, and this is my fee. And they will tell you exactly what they want you to do, what they don't want you to do. But there is another option when you're educating yourself on how to do a collection of a judgment. There is usually a local legal society or nonprofit that will help you either as a tenant or as a landlord that will have resources, and you can explain your situation and they can help direct you as well. And it will very likely be free or by donation. But the first aspect of not chasing people for money after you have a judgment is educating yourself on collections. Not fun, but it's a necessary evil in your business. Okay, the second part. Once you have a judgment, you've got to decide how much time, money, effort, and stress you want to put into this. You've got to decide, because at any point, if you're not wanting to move forward, guess what? You can turn it off, especially once you have an empty unit. Remember, the goal of an eviction is an empty unit, not to collect money. That's a separate battle. You are fighting for an empty unit. The second part of after you have a judgment is to decide how much effort, how much time, how much lost sleep you want to put into this, because they may not have any money to give you. Even if you have a judgment for $10,000, let's say, they may not have any money to give you. Even if you do what's called a bank sweep, which is where the courts or the bailiffs can go in one time and sweep bank accounts that these people may or may not have, you may not even get enough money to pay the bailiff if you do a sweep. So you just have to be careful, because is it worth the chase? It may not be. And you may just prolong the stress and frustration, because if you think you're going to get a big payday, it depends on what you see. If you know this person has got, you know, $40,000 and they've caused $40,000 worth of issues for you, that's maybe something that you want to pursue. However, if it's not something that you want to, you know, you don't want to go down that road, then just stop. You've got a judgment. Great. Michael and I've done that ourselves. We got a judgment against some tenants for some back pay, storage, a little bit of damage, $10,000. We went to trial and we got a judgment for $10,000. And I just said, what do you want to do now? Do you want to do bank sweep? Do you want to hire a bailiff? Do you want to do this? The bailiff was probably going to be close to $1,000. And Michael looked at me and he says, let's just stop. Let's just completely stop. Let's say, yeah, we got a judgment and we are choosing to stop because we want it to be done. And so we did. We just let it go. And you know what? I'm glad we did, because it would have just prolonged the stress and we probably wouldn't have gotten any money anyway. And we would have still had to pay the bailiff. Okay. So after you have a legal judgment, you've got an order for this person to pay. After you've educated yourself on how collections work in your area and you've decided how much stress you want to put yourself through, the last thing you need to know is sometimes tough lessons are involved. There may be no closure in this judgment. And I've already alluded to this. You might have to just let it go, lick your wounds and move on. Now you might be saying, but Jen, what if these, I don't have $40,000. I can't renovate my property. I guarantee you somebody out there is willing to help get your solution to help you move forward. And guess what? You're going to have a greater appreciation of screening tenants, setting up rents so that they're completely hands off, making sure you have a process for late rents, and let's face it, maintenance, so that you don't have this happen again. You'll get that. So if you've got a judgment, those are the three things: educate yourself, decide how much effort you want to have involved, and the third thing is know that there may not be any closure, that you might just have to say that's it and chalk it up as lessons learned and do it better next time and move on. We've had to do that. So those of you who know my podcast, you know that I have a call to action. And so here it is. So if you're a current landlord, I want you to review the ways that you collect rent. How can you remove yourself from that process? If you're knocking on doors on the first of every month, you might evaluate if that's the best thing for you and for your tenants. Can you make your rent collection ways more hands-off? And if you've got leases in force right now, how would you do that? How would you actually say, look, I'm not going to collect rents anymore? You need to give them proper notice. You need to give your tenants proper notice. So it'll be in writing and it will very likely be 30 or 60 or maybe even 90 days, that some reasonable amount of time to shift the way that you're going to collect the rents, that you want your rent paid. This will help you and will stop you from chasing money off the hop. So if you're a landlord right now, I encourage you, evaluate how you are asking your tenants to pay. Now let's go to the legal stuff. If you have a judgment pending or you've been given a judgment and you are chasing somebody for money, is it worth it? You need to ask yourself, is it worth it? Is it worth it out of spite? Is it worth it out of stress? You need to really ask yourself, how much effort is this worth and how much reward are you going to get? That's it. So people reached out quite a bit to say, hey, Jen, how do you not chase people for money? Well, that's it. I don't chase people for money because I set it up that way. And in the event I do have a judgment for myself, then I've got to really evaluate, is it worth the effort? So that's it. Next episode, how tenants screen their landlord. Interesting perspective. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us this week. To view the complete show notes and all the links mentioned in today's episode, visit our website at www.mylifeasalandlord.com. If you're looking for educational resources for getting into real estate investing, becoming a landlord, or even a better tenant, then I have a page on my website to get you started. Looking for a solution to the pickle that you're in? I have suggestions for that too. You can throw your situation on my Facebook group, My Life as a Landlord, and let our community help you with solutions also. Before you go, make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you can receive new episodes right when they're released.
You can either subscribe right now in the app you're listening to this podcast on, or you can sign up at www.mylifeasalandlord.com. Thank you again for joining me, Dr. Jennifer Salisbury, in this episode of My Life as a Landlord. I'll see you next time.